Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For many people, familiarity with former U.S. President Andrew Jackson doesn't go beyond a $20 bill. However, the man known as Old Hickory lived a colorful life, which is getting the musical treatment in the show Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. The show opens this weekend at the Pittsburgh Playhouse Conservatory Theater under the direction of Michael McKelvey, who joins us now in Studio A. Michael McKelvey, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thanks so much.
As I understand it, this is not the first time you have directed this show. What has drawn you to this particular musical?
A former student of mine was actually in the original Williamstown production that she took it all the way to Broadway. She's one of the two cast members that did that. She turned me on to it. I'm a big fan of new musical theater, especially things with a bit of an edge. And I like politics, and I like the mess that politics can be. So it seems like it was a good marriage with everything. So,
what about Andrew Jackson makes him a compelling figure, especially to create a contemporary musical around?
Well, because he really was America's first, as we put it, our first rock star president, so to speak. I mean, he helped develop the Democratic Party. He was known as the people's president. Populism was the thrust of his administration, where it's someone representing the people, for the people, government by the people. And that was also his downfall, too, where he was relying too much on being liked and taking the word of everyone. You can't take everyone's word. Otherwise, you just end up with, I don't know, just a big mess of an administration. And that's what kind of happened with him.
The posters promoting this show promote it as a show based on sex, democracy, and rock and roll. Democracy, of course, being the substitute word for drugs, which is normally the phrase.
Right.
So is democracy considered to be some sort of a drug here in some way, shape, or form?
I think when you see the show, you'll understand it. It's democracy is at the heart of everything. And I think today we don't really understand democracy the way that Jackson, like that he and his people started it, where it really was like we're there to be the voice of the people. We really want to have contact with the people. We're so removed from our political leaders now. But within the show, it just seems like it is that kind of drug for him, that he really wants to do right for his constituents. And also he wants to kind of stick it in the face of these other political leaders who don't seem to listen to their constituents. Also, that's how he lost his first presidency. His first run at the presidency, where he lost to John Quincy Adams. They pulled the presidency away from him. He won the popular vote. He won the Electoral College. But because he didn't have the majority, Congress then had the right to decide who was going to be the United States president, and they, what was called the corrupt bargain, they threw Quincy Adams into the presidency because why? He would do their bidding. And there again, the people lost out on their choice for president.
But wasn't Jackson just as much of a Machiavellian figure for whom power was was the drug.
Power was the drug, and it became the drug. And also we see it's painted this way in the show as well, because it's kind of that self-righteous attitude. I will do right by the people, but it kept feeding him. It kept feeding those around him to put him into higher power so he could, quote-unquote, be the voice of the people. And it also made him blind to what was really happening in his country, and that's where we get the Trail of Tears, where he leads the Indians on the move westward, but also killing thousands of Native Americans. There was something in one documentary I watched on him where we keep saying he's the people's president, but a lot of African Americans have problems with Jackson. Because why? He didn't do anything for the plight of the slaves, right? He got in the face of South Carolina and said, you're not going to secede because you want to keep slavery. But also he wasn't doing anything to abolish slavery. So again, when you're saying you're the people's president, well, which people are you being president for? It sure is not the Native Americans, and it's not the African Americans. And it really isn't women. I mean, it's plantation owners, it's business people, all that. So again, it's kind of a mixed message with him. You're But that power source you're talking about, that drug for him, yeah, it's very much there. And it shows up in the show.
And because of the atrocities that happened under his watch, Native Americans have called it their Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that and other things, Jackson has been compared as a historical figure to Hitler. Is that, in your mind, a fair comparison?
I don't know to Hitler. But
you don't ever find yourself saying, geez, I'm making the producers only it's about Jackson instead of a Nazi or a Hitler-esque figure.
I think you really have to see the show to understand, like, we're not glorifying this man in the show. We're discussing his life and the great things he did for the country and the horrible things he did for the country. And the final question that's brought to us by our storyteller is, is he a genocidal maniac? Is he an American Hitler? Or is he one of our greatest presidents? Should he be on Mount Rushmore? Because of the great things he did for land expansion for us. He got rid of the National Bank. He did away with tariffs. He stopped states from seceding from the Union. He tried to bring us closer together. But also the atrocities he brought onto the Native American nation. And then you also have to look at the time, too. I'm not saying I'm a big Jackson supporter or anything like that, but when he did it, was it wrong? Jefferson, supposedly one of our greatest leaders. I mean, Jefferson did a lot of things that you question and say, okay, great. You're supposed to be one of the greatest leaders in American history, but you were also one of the most rampant slave owners we know and things like that. But we put him on this pedestal until you really look at what the man did. I don't know how you can paint him. I think every person has to answer that question for themselves. And that's what the show does. It really puts it back on the audience.
We're talking with Michael McKelvey. He is director of Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, which is opening this weekend at the Pittsburgh Playhouse Conservatory Theater here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. This show has been described as an emo musical. What does that term mean?
Okay, emo is a movement in contemporary music. So Michael Friedman, who wrote the music, he painted it as young men putting on eyeliner or things like that, singing about topics that are extremely emotional, almost melodramatic, over the top. I call it wear your emotions on your sleeves, rock and roll. Everything you do is important and serious and emotional. My heart's going to break with every lyric I sing. I'm so angry. I'm so pissed. And that seems to be like all rock and roll, but emo seems to have kind of one note. It's just all in your face. I'm so upset. And that's what happens with almost every song Jackson sings. I'm either so elated or I'm so upset or I'm so this. And in fact, the first name of the third song in the show is called I'm So That Guy. Right. The first one is like, I'm not that guy. I don't want to lead. And then the third song of the show is I'm so that guy. I'm so going to lead. I'm so going to be your governor and your president and all these things. So, yeah, it's heightened emotions across the board.
So this is, in a way, like bringing back the old fashioned melodrama, but with a modern spin.
I think so. And even the way that it's written, there are some scenes that definitely are melodramatic. We've toyed with going completely melodrama. We've pulled back some, but the music kind of does that. The vignette scenarios set up throughout the show kind of give us a little of that feeling of melodrama. I love the second scene in the show where they actually describe it as a bad PBS historical special, and that's the way it should be played. So we've had a lot of fun with things like that.
Will the audience receive a history lesson as well as being entertained?
Yeah. Hopefully they'll be entertained. That's my goal. I think they will. We've also done an entire breakdown of the history of Jackson's life to be displayed in the lobby because you get a lot of facts thrown at you really quick. Some of them are completely accurate. Some of them not so much, loose interpretations of his life and things like that. Some for humorous matter, some just I think we're still not sure about when certain things happened or the order they happened in, like the death of his family and all that. because he basically was an orphan by age 14. His father died, I believe, when he was 2. His mother died when he was 14. Both of his brothers died within the war of, I think one died of cholera. The other one died of a similar illness, but everyone was dead by the time he was 14. But we just kind of lump all that together in one scene. We shoot them all as if the Indians shot them, but actually no one was killed by Indians. So it's kind of a joke, but I don't know if the audience is going to get it that way.
In putting the show together, were you surprised to learn certain things about the nation's 7th president? And if so, what were they?
Oh, I'm from the West Coast originally. So, and then I've lived half my life in Texas. So anything that kind of happens around the Midwest and the Mideast, I'm still kind of a novice at knowing. So with Jackson, I think it is all the things he did in regards to the National Bank, like demolishing the National Bank, doing away with it because of the corruption involved with it. That was one. I knew nothing about South Carolina trying to secede because basically of their business practices and that slavery was the key to South Carolina, and that Jackson's one of his main people that he was opposing in his presidency was John Calhoun, who was the leader of South Carolina. So this battle between the two men, I had no idea about these things. So, it's been fun for me to learn about this. It's been shocking at times to learn about some of the things and how they went on. I didn't really understand how the corrupt bargain worked when he lost his first run of the presidency. So doing research on those kind of things was really surprising. I didn't know how big a political force Henry Clay was, or who really that man was, and that he was this huge political machinist at that time. So, yeah, it's things like that. It has been a nice history lesson.
And the show's been performed on and off Broadway. It's been staged quite a bit around the country. What do you think has made it so popular?
I think it's that. It has something. It has the feeling of being a happening at times. I've expressed that to my cast. Shows like Hair, Spring Awakening, Rent have – it's more than just the storylines. In fact, Hair doesn't really have a linear storyline to it. But it's this feeling of the nation. It's this feeling of rebellion, of having to have your voice heard that's made it the timeless classic that it is in musical theater. But to me, Hair is a happening. I think in its own way, Bloody Bloody is that. It's not a linear story. I mean, we're getting vignettes of his life and things like that. But this music, the passion behind it, it does speak to younger audiences. But when I originally did this in Austin, we found out that older audiences really liked it too. I thought it would be too loud, too in your face, and they really enjoyed it. Not everyone. I mean, it is. It's loud rock music. You have a braggart of a leading man, like, strutting around the stage, declaring that he's doing everything for the good, and then you're watching this man basically piss the nation away. So, yeah, everyone reacts to it a little differently, but I think it really does speak to a lot of age groups.
Will this show serve to kind of create a mythical identity for Andrew Jackson, much in the way that Patton did for General Patton?
I don't think so, because with Patton, we see the great military leader, but also this very human man.
But if young people can identify with
this
guy.
They can, but I think when the way that his story is presented, at first, their first hearing of the thing, you kind of sit there and go, wow, this guy was really misunderstood, and what a great figure. And then when you see the show, you read the libretto, you're understanding that, you know what, he was very human. Very human and very frail, and there's a lot of things that we can identify with him, but there's also things that anger me to no end that I wouldn't sit there and say, like, I'm a Jacksonist, I'm in his corner, because why? He screwed up a lot. So I don't think we're going to put him on the pedestal that maybe some people like to put Patton on. Maybe his heart was in the right place, maybe it was misguided, I don't know. But I don't think we glorify the man. I think we just show him as a human being that went through a very strange, curvy life.
Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson is the name of the show. It opens this weekend at the Pittsburgh Playhouse Conservatory Theater. We've been talking with the director, Michael McKelvey, here in Studio A. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
And more Essential Pittsburgh coming up on 90.5 WESA. The story always ends the same. It's hard to handle all that fame.